This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebound and Safety. Today is a brand new quarterly co-host. Let's jump into the intro. I'm going to tell you some more about it. Let's go.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety, crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Blue.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Today we're talking to a brand new quarter co-host, and this lady's a bit of a legend. You're going to get to know her over 3 episodes, just chatting about structure of a safety team and how do we kind of change a culture, and what does psychological safety look like, and what's authenticity, and just all of these things, all structured all around changing culture, safety culture, whatever we want to call it, in the organization. So who is the quarterly co-host then? It is the one and only legendary Crystal Danbury. She's going to stay with us for 3 episodes. We're going to get in deep on 3 subjects. I'll let her explain them more in a second. So let's jump into the sponsorship advert before we get into today's episode then. As you know, Paradigm Human Performance, and more specifically the HSC subscription service, is the proud sponsor of Rebrand and Safety YouTube and podcast. Absolute perfect solution for those small, medium-sized enterprise, those kind of people that are juggling all the plates, and sometimes safety just falls by the wayside. Not consciously, it just happens, you know, and we're not here to blame, we're just here to help. And that is literally what Paradigm Human Performance is trying to do. With this HSE subscription service, they are your right hand. They're human performance experts. So this isn't the kind of off-the-shelf compliance system you're going to have to declutter a couple of years down the line. This is an absolutely human organizational performance kind of influenced compliance system. Because compliance, whether we like it or not, is part of what we do. We have to do that. Paradigm noted that, and they were like, there is something we can bring to this. There is something that we can do better. And they're doing it with this subscription service. So go check them out. If you're sold already, if this is the right solution for you, there's an email address, phone number in the description below. If you're still not quite sure, you can check out their website, which is a brand new website. Go check that out. That'll be in the description below. And if you're still not sure, sign up for a learning organization webinar, which runs every other Thursday now at 2 p.m. And the best thing is you can get access to all of their backlog of webinars as well, which is a whole library of amazing resources. You can get to know them. You can see their credibility in the moment. And you can actually learn something whilst you're doing it. So go check Paradigm out. And without further ado, let's get into the episode. Right, Crystal, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That's all right, more than welcome. When you're just about to come out, actually, on the podcast, back in the other mini series when we talked about diversity, my wife was editing your episode yesterday. You're going to be our quarterly co-host for this year, the last one of this year. So it's gone quite well so far. So I'm looking forward to kind of ending the first year of the quarterly co-host. So
an absolute pleasure to be the co-host as well.
Awesome. And we're just going to keep it me and you. We're just going to chew the fat about a couple of things. So do you want to tell us quickly what we're going to chew the fat about and kind of what each episode will be? And then we'll get into today's episode.
Yeah, absolutely. So the trio of podcasts that we're going to do are going to be called the Three Cornerstones of Safety Change. And episode 1 will be about psych safety, sort of what is it? Why do we need it in safety and risk? The next one will be about authenticity. And what is its role in safety culture, specifically safety culture change? And then the last one is all going to be about safety teams. What should they look like? What should you have in them? What is a good safety team? So really looking forward to digging into these. And the logic for these actually is when you ask me to have a think about what I want to talk about, these are the 3 things that I look at anywhere. This is sort of from top to bottom. Can we speak freely? You know, are people free to be themselves? And what's the skills and expertise needed to execute great safety change? So that is the logic behind the 3 cornerstones of safety change.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Do you want to introduce yourself, Crystal, in case anybody doesn't know who you are?
Yeah, so I'm Crystal Danbury. I have worked in safety for 19 years this year, and I have worked across nuclear, rail, transport and logistics, telecoms and retail. And safety expert, fine in terms of technical, but also absolute driver of culture change. And I suppose probably one thing to put in the room, lots of people comment that when I speak or post or do any things like this, it's sometimes about safety specifically, but quite often about leadership. And that's because my overall aim is not just to make safety better, but to make the world better. So that's basically what I'm here to tackle and change and drive.
Love that. Love that. Right then. So psychological safety, a big buzzword at the moment. Let's get into that. In your kind of own words, you've kind of alluded to it there, which is something you said quite nicely, which I'm going to jump on if you don't mention it again. How would you kind of define psychological safety? What is it to you?
I think in the simplest of terms, it would be the freedom and confidence to speak and speak the truth. I think all too often the thing that breaks safety is this sort of fear. This fear to say, so it's the opposite of having fear in behind what you're saying. So yeah, a freedom to speak openly and honestly, knowing that nothing bad will happen as a consequence.
Yeah, I remember the first kind of time I stumbled across psychological safety, I was a little bit like, this is kind of what we've been missing. Like, yeah. Maybe we've been missing a lot more than one thing, but I was like, oh, yeah, this is the thing we've been missing, you know. Like when we've got all the, you know, just this morning I was on a call and we were like, oh, we've implemented this business-wide kind of speak up campaign. And I was just kind of like, that's really good. But ultimately, if you haven't got any presence of psychological safety, it was just going to fall flat on its ass.
Yeah.
Just going to fall, it's just going to be a platitude. That's all it'll be. And the more I kind of look at it, and the more I think, It is so closely related to so much of our organizational challenges the challenges we experience. You know, as you look at kind of HOP, is kind of a solution to kind of learning from error, learning from normal work and reducing error and stuff like that. Psychological safety is a massive part of that. You know, resilience is probably, to summarize that, is all about, I suppose, kind of building on success and being more successful and kind of absorbing failure and change and stuff like that. Psychological safety is a massive part of that. You know, good management, leadership, it's in everything. It is absolutely in everything.
I think very often, if you see organizations go through the journey of culture change, they go from reactive to compliance-driven to generative. The very interesting thing about that is, you know, compliance-driven safety brings some result. You have to say that's the case, right? Process will drive some result. So you see a nice, tidy line. Then if you really want to get into generative safety, and I say this everywhere I go, you can't do anything progressive culture-wise unless someone's going to tell you what's really happening. Unless somebody's going to tell you the process is broken, the paper is broken.
Yeah.
If somebody's going to tell you the reason they had an accident, or even tell you about the accident source, you can't do any work until somebody's going to tell you the truth. So the gap very often from going from compliance-driven safety to generative or this proactive piece, the stack goes the wrong way. And I say that in inverted commas, because you have to start building trust and you then get told the truth. And then your stats go up because people are telling you not what's happening as a result. You know, nothing new is happening. You're just getting the honest picture.
Yeah.
And this can be the point that sort of boards wobble and say, oh God, it's all going in the wrong direction. What are we doing? No, you're just finally seeing the reality.
Yeah.
But you can't move from the center of that dial to the really positive part if nobody trusts you. And no, that means nobody can tell you what's really going on and therefore what needs to change.
Yeah. It's interesting, in an interview I watched of Amy Edmondson, who kind of is the kind of popular name within psychological safety. And it was kind of her work that was picked up by Google in the Aristotle project or whatever it was called. She said, actually, she kind of has referred to it a lot as like speak up kind of culture. She said, in hindsight, I wish I'd have called it listen up. And I will not forget that. Like, they were talking about it, and the interviewer was like, yeah, so speak up and this. And she was like, yeah, we keep mentioning speak up, but she was like, in hindsight, I kind of wish I wish I'd have called it listen up. And I was just like, yeah, that's a much better way to kind of, we can say speak up all the time, but ultimately, if you're not listening, then they're going to stop speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've just done a podcast with Christian Harris, and he was saying, what are your three things that you would make sure are in the center of sort of a safety culture project? Like, what are your sort of three golden rules? And mine were listen, step one, right? If you are actually going to ask your people to talk, you are absolutely obligated to listen. Then the second point is sit with that feedback. Do not defend it. Do not talk it down. Do not dismantle it. If somebody has told you the truth and you don't like it, that's because something is wrong, right? It's not their problem. They've been open. Your job is to sit, immerse yourself in that, and really try and come from the end user's point of view. And then the third thing is act with intent. You must act with intent as a result of the feedback. And I see so many organizations that do a dry survey. They'll explain most of the findings away, and then they'll do a plan that they never come back to. And what are you hoping to achieve in terms of faith and trust from that?
And it just, you know, we kind of talk about that work is done, work is imagined all the time. You know, it's the policies, it's procedures and all. But I think the biggest issue in work is imagined and work is done is psychological safety. You know, if people are too conscious or unconsciously scared to say what they believe, I suppose, what they see, what they feel, then ultimately doesn't matter how much work you're going to do to kind of make your policies and procedures, your approaches to risk management more people centered, it doesn't matter if you haven't got that kind of relationship in which they can kind of talk to you open and honestly, then you're never going to see it. And I do think as well, like, it's uncomfortable. Maybe now we're going into the kind of maybe part of the next question. What does this actually look like in reality? Like, I think there's a bit of a common, I don't know what your opinion is, there's a common kind of misconception that this is just all when everyone agrees. And I think it's quite the opposite. Like, psychological safety is when you're in a room, you're all bickering with each other, but you're all doing it quite amicably, and you know that you're going in the right direction, and it's a good thing. Like, I'll never forget, we interviewed Dr. Dara Blumenthal like ages ago, and we clipped it, and it's even in the intro now to the podcast, and it was like, it's feeling safe to be uncomfortable. And I was like, you couldn't have put it any better.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, something we definitely keep talking about here without putting our finger right on it is this, it's trust.
Mm-hmm.
I trust that if I say something that is uncomfortable, against the grain, breaks a process, or that I did something wrong, that A, you'll hear me out, and that B, together we'll learn from this. And, you know, I think the learning from failure, you have to go right back and say, unless somebody feels okay to tell you that they failed, you ain't learning nothing.
Yeah, definitely. Have you ever worked anywhere where you felt like, yeah, this is a psychologically safer environment, or been anywhere that you've gone, yeah, this is what psychological safety looks like? Did you know, I suppose, is probably the good question.
Yeah. I think actually I'm kind of going through that feeling now. I feel very psychologically safe now. And really, really interestingly, I think if somebody was going to ask me, how can you articulate that? How do you know you feel psychologically safe? And I would say it's quite easy, especially in our field where it's a niche profession. to stand up in a room and say, what's A, B, and C, right? When it's particularly related to our field, where discomfort comes or could come is when you're speaking out of lane, right? When I'm speaking about my opinion about your lane or about your performance or about something else that's going on in the business. And I feel very safe right now to be part of a conversation about something that's not technically my area of accountability. And I think that's real safety. That's the safety that I'm not going to get shouted down. That's the safety that you're going to value my opinion about your thing. It's very easy for people to value my opinion about safety because it, you know, in the organization, they employed me to do safety. That's the easy part. I mean, in that's almost step one, isn't it? I've definitely worked in organizations where you go in and then you don't feel safe to say, I know you think this is great here, but I've got some news for you. And you really have to, you know, it's your moral obligation to land the message that you've got work to do, but knowing that that will go down badly and actually the repercussion will be, well, I'm expecting you to fix it tomorrow. Mm. I've definitely worked in places like that where that's like safety is not there. But right now it's different. I feel like I can really be part of any conversation at a leadership level. And that feels really special.
So you're kind of talking at it from a point of view quite personally and broadly. So like, to me, that sounds more like confidence in your own ability. Or would you say maybe that is part of psychological safety? It's like confidence in yourself is a big part of it, maybe.
I think that's a really interesting question about what part, how much of psych safety is about confidence. Because you have to, is it the trust that's central to psych safety that enables you to know nothing bad's going to happen when you speak up?
Is
the trust that gives you confidence?
Yeah, like, and when you say trust, is that trust in yourself or is that trust in the person you're talking to? Or is it trust in yourself and trust in the person you're talking to?
I think that, I mean, just to latch to that point, I think that's an amazing point. I think psychological safety, there has to be two people either side of this. It's almost like a relationship, right? There is you and then there is the recipient of your message. The thing in the middle, the event, the truth that is going to be very uncomfortable, you have to feel safe in yourself. You have to feel confident in yourself and your messaging that it's bang on. And you also have to feel confident that the person on the other side of the conversation is going to receive it and receive it openly. So I think it's definitely two parts there. I have to feel confident in me and the other person to receive me.
Yeah, like I feel like psychological safety is a property of a group and trust. Confidence is a personal property, whereas psychological safety is a collective property. Maybe like, I don't know, I might be way off base here, but like I feel like psychological safety is a property of a group interaction.
So if you were going into a one-to-one with a hyper-aggressive boss and you needed to tell them you missed a major deadline, you dropped the ball.
Yeah.
Is the difficulty in that message being delivered about the psychological safety that they're going to be hyper aggressive, or does that not count in that room because it's one to one?
No, yeah, no, definitely. Like, is that a psychologically safe relationship? Yeah. So when I say a group, I probably mean more than one. Like, this has been more than one person, so it's either two people or more. So definitely,
I think a receiver.
Yeah, there has to be kind of, I don't know, I might be wrong, but like there has to be, I think, for you to, I think if I was to say like I feel psychologically safe, I have to be in an environment in which I can, what I'm going to say is going to be received by people. So like there's a difference between that and confidence, I think, in that I think confidence is something that probably contributes to psychological safety. Maybe.
I think maybe it's first step. I think I've definitely met a lot of people and actually been at a lot of conferences and stuff where, I don't know if you've ever done, sat at the bar and somebody maybe junior or maybe just like new to that sort of type of environment that's like, oh, I had such a good point, but I just couldn't say it.
Yeah.
They were confident in their own point. They knew that what they had to say was totally valid.
Yeah.
But it's almost that next step, isn't it, about the receiver. So that two-way relationship again about, I'm confident in my part, just don't know about the room or the individual.
Yeah.
It feels uncertain.
Yeah. No, I think that's like if you were in the audience, of a conference, I wouldn't say that's very, it'd be very hard to make that a very psychologically safe environment, because naturally it's quite intimidating. You've got to be very confident in yourself to say something. But then I feel like every time there's an interaction in the room, the psychological safety can either increase a little bit or decrease a little bit, depending on the reaction of the room and the speaker.
100. And so I think that is almost the next part in that journey is if you're in a room and you really want feedback and you're not getting it, you know something about that room is missing, whether it's the trust, the confidence, a mixture of the two, whether it's a trust and confidence in self or trust and confidence in you. Something in that dynamic is missing. But for every person that breaks that silence, if it's in a positive way and received positively, you are absolutely increasing the psychological safety of that room. But if the message out is delivered horrendously or received horrendously, that silence will continue. You will make it worse. So absolutely every interaction in that room that you're trying to make safe can increase and decrease the level of safety.
Yeah. And I think when we talk about it, we may make it sound like it's really easy, but I think there's a lot of minutiae in this, isn't there? There's so much I don't know, I'm thinking of ultimately when you're a trainer or you're running a workshop or something like that, especially from a safety point of view or a hot point of view, whatever it is, you're trying to create a psychologically safe environment because you want that the delegates, the employees, whoever's in the room, you want and probably need them to interact with you. And having the situation come up where you may need to see someone something awkward. So that's not actually what I asked, or that's not what I was looking for, or that's not the right answer. How you can either pre-prepare for that or respond to that is huge in how you kind of increase or decrease the presence of psychological safety within the room. And interestingly, when I don't know if you listened to it, but we had Helen Heenan on the podcast, and she blew my mind. Bearing in mind, I had been a trainer for years, and I come off that call thinking, I'm a shit trainer. And I thought I was good at it, and I actually thought that was the one thing that I was really good at, and just so many things that she was like that I have done and did do for a very long time. Like, can the room give me some examples of, I don't know, what's the last training I did was fire safety, so give me some examples of compartmentation. Oh, it's that. Okay, great. Click the slide. Here's some examples of compartmentation. She was like, you've just told them that whatever they say doesn't matter. If you want the room to tell you what it is, don't have the slide. Get what they're saying and post it, put it on a wall. Or this is not a workshop, it's a lecture, and you're just going to lecture them. You're not going to ask for their opinion. She was like, decide what it is. If it's a lecture, that's fine. But if you want it to be an environment where they're engaging, you're trying to build psychological safety, then each time you ask them for a contribution, how you react to that contribution impacts how much psychological safety there is in a room. And I was like, shit.
I suppose it's how you build that feeling of value, isn't it? What I'm going to say is valuable, it leads to a better end. And actually in the training courses, because I did an adult teaching qualification because it was my aspiration some years ago to deliver NEBOSH training because I hated the way it was delivered. Because it was, I wanted to really bring safety alive and I wanted to do it in a sort of very human way. And so in that course, they did the same thing, which was like ask for the create a feeling of participation, get the answers in the room, and then, you know, put your slide up. And my problem with that has always been, I don't want to create a feeling of participation. I want people to participate.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be an artificial feeling. And I think when you, like you say, when you meet people like that, where you just, they blow your mind. And I think that that's the whole thing about mentoring, can be anything. It can be finite. It can be in one session. Mm. It can be somebody that you read and listen to all the time. There's little snippets. And interestingly, James, you've done it for very many years. It would be very easy for you to discount that, so not take the feedback, not sit with it, not reflect on it, and just be like, you do it differently to me, but I've done it for ages, so I know. You were open to that feedback and that lesson. I'm like, right, okay, cool. And you'll probably change something as a result.
Oh, 100%. I would never train the same ever again. And actually, to the point where I'm desperate to do some training to try out all these new things. Like, I'm literally like, I've thrown options of free of charge training to members and everything in my day job, just because I am desperate to give it another go. And I do think that is, that's another important property of psychological safety, is being able to be disagreed with or be told that you are actually wrong, and just go, oh, okay, cool, that's interesting. It doesn't mean you're submissive and you're constantly not defending yourself, or you're constantly not going, hang on a minute. It means that when it gets to a point that your acknowledgement of the bias is now taking over, and actually I'm no longer being sensible about this. You know, as soon as Helen had said, you know, this happens, and then that result created, the result of that is this, I was just like, Jesus, that makes so much sense. So, you know, the bias, kind of being able to acknowledge, I'm not saying, oh, I'm all amazing, like, I'm just using this as an example, being able to acknowledge that my arrogance or kind of biases are taking over, and I'm going, no, Helen, you're wrong, and going, actually, Helen is right in this point. I think that's a really important trait, which I find, it's a rare trait in a lot of managers that I've had in the past. And of the ones I have had that have had that, I've, you know, respected them very highly. But ultimately, I think maybe we've built management on two things, kind of arrogance and aggression.
Oh, I think there's never a truer word said, actually. Having worked in an awful lot of what I would call heavy industry, male-dominated industries, lots and lots of the management structures that I have seen over very many years has been built on bullish arrogance, a, you know, very clear direction by senior people, but an absolute fear of everybody around them to say, this feels immoral, or this doesn't feel quite right, or is this sort of broad enough, complex enough, all of those questions. And everybody is terrified to answer the question. And then for those that aren't terrified, the reprimand. So all this whole thing about, you know, leadership being built on arrogance, I think it's one of the worst traits of the old school traditional leadership teams.
Yeah.
But the really wonderful thing about this is I definitely see those tables changing. I definitely see the types of people sat at those tables changing. And the conversations, even on ones like this, right, just they are more frequent, they are more prevalent than they ever have been, to challenge that status quo and that attitude to leadership. I absolutely love Gary Vee. I say this all the time, and he says something, he sort of almost shouts it from the stage. He said, the minute you realize that you work for your people and your people don't work for you, like, you're right there with leadership. And I take that really to heart.
Mate, I quote Gary Vee all the time, like, all the time. Good. And people are just like, why are you quoting this kind of like stocks and trade guy? I'm like, if that's all you think he is, then you're an idiot. Yes, he's a bit, you know, he's very much an extrovert. He's really out there and stuff like that. I get that. But ultimately, his message is so right, like, so right. And there is so much that safety alone could learn from him, let alone leaders in general, managers and many other professions.
I think like in business, they could learn a lot from. I remember him answering a question about somebody had challenged him and said, you always talk about patience, but when you're talking about business, you're talking about being, you know, constantly switched. If it's your own business, if you're an entrepreneur, you speak about being up all hours of the day and night responding to every single tweet that was ever sent to you. So that doesn't feel patient to me. That feels, you know, hyper-focused. And he was like, well, we're talking about an activity or we're talking about sort of business. And he said, it's macro patience, mate. Never going to change anything overnight. In terms of the day-to-day, hyper-focus is required if it's just your bag. And he was just like, so let me just say this again. Macro patience, you know,
micro focus,
like attentiveness, basically. And I thought, I love that. And I feel that when I look at an organization, especially one that I think I can really help this organization grow, macro patience, because lots of people have to come on a journey, micro focus on the activities and the individual conversations I have that build to a bigger purpose.
And before we slip into a podcast, we're just talking about how much we can learn from Gary Vee, which I actually feel like we should just record that now. I feel like that has to happen. that needs to happen. We should just get loads of clips of Gary Vee, watch it, have it play in the middle of the screen, and me and you can just like analyze it. And just that would be great content. Anyway, I talking of Gary Vee, there is one thing that he says a lot, which I think is massively important to business in general, especially human error and failure, but ultimately psychological safety. And we've touched on it. It is empathy. I mean, the man's wine, his own wine line is called empathy, I believe, or something around that. And, you know, he talks about that all the time, is having empathy of the you know, of the person that's telling you. And we talk about it a lot in HOP, putting yourself in another person's shoes, safety differently, we'll talk about it, get in the tunnel. We talk about it in many different ways. I interviewed Chris Clearfield, who we've read the book in the book club at Meltdown. So he talks about complexity theory and tight coupling. And it was just so funny that he was talking away and he was like, oh, I was having a chat the other day, James, with somebody else. And we were saying, do you know what we need? We need like, I can't remember what he called it, but we need like business empathy or something like that. And I said, that's creepy. And I literally leant over my screen, picked a post-it that I'd wrote off ages ago on the wall. And I went, look at that post-it. And it said organizational empathy. And I was like, you're exactly right. We need to be better at being empathetic towards just people in general.
Isn't it crazy? Every organization has one thing in common, right? It's built on people. You need somebody to deliver the widget, the product, the message, the whatever, right? And yet we lose the focus that it's about people.
Yeah, I know, right?
And if they all went home tomorrow and didn't come back, you don't have a business. You have liquidation, right? They turn up tomorrow and do a better job, your business is better. They turn up tomorrow and do a worse job, you have a worse business.
Yeah.
Your people create whatever you're doing. And yet we will drive to a piece of paper, we'll drive to a process, and we forget. The biggest asset and the thing that makes every organization happen is people. So empathy has to be a really core principle, I think, of business, because it's very easy to build an ivory tower away from all those people that deliver your business. And without empathy, you have detachment, and with detachment, that's on a hide into nothing.
Yeah.
And I suppose bringing it back to psych safety and safety, I think this is why I feel extremely privileged to do this job, to work in my field, because my job doesn't have a lane. It doesn't have a specific area of the business. I get to look after people. I get to put people in the center. I get to empathize and bring that to life for an organization. And I think it's magic. And I think empathy is one of the really big keys to psych safety. And it's that whole thing about, I trust you to care about my message. I trust you to care about my feedback. And the best example of psych safety and making somebody feel comfortable that I ever had, and it's such a small example, I went out with an engineer about 2, maybe 3 years ago now. And he was, I was spending every other week with an engineer, one day every fortnight with an engineer, just to see what life was like. No pens, no papers, just like, what's life like? And I'd spent a little time with this guy, and I was talking about his life and his kids, and, you know, we'd rolled up to this job. And he started to do this test and he said, do you want me to show you how we really do it?
Oh, nice.
And I said, I'd love to. I'd really love to know, because I bet it's bloody clever. And he was like, it is actually really clever. And I'll never say what it was that he showed me, but it was extremely clever, extremely dangerous. And I was like, okay, thank you so much for sort of sharing this with me.
Yeah.
Where do you think we should go from here? What do you think we should do? And do you see the risk to yourself? Because nothing's worth more than you getting home.
Yeah.
So where do we go? And he was just like, well, I think really you have the knowledge that this happens now, and I've told you why we do it this way. Maybe you can tackle the why, and you know, I'll try not to do it this way anymore. And we had a really big conversation about this might be quicker, and it might be really hot out there in terms of like getting the job done, but you are worth more than this job, right? And you always will be. So when you've got 10, you know, this takes 8 minutes and your way takes 30 seconds, your life is always worth 8 minutes.
Mm.
So make the right decision. And in the meantime, I will try and fix this.
Mm.
And the conversation for the rest of the day, he was just like, well, I'm not going to show you all of this other stuff. I'm just going to show you what we really do. And because I'd spoken to him about him and because he felt safe, and at the top of it, I said to him, and maybe this is a little bit about how you induce psychological safety, how you start. I said to him, I ain't got no pen and paper today, mate. I'm not interested in notes. I'm not interested in close calls or near misses. I'm interested in you and your day and all of the great stuff and crap stuff that you have to deal with.
Yeah.
I'm just here to learn.
Love that.
And we got literally halfway through the day. And I think it was like, she ain't got a pen out. She ain't got paper out. She's just talking to me about me. She's interested in what I'm doing. It builds, there was trust.
Mm, I love that. That's such a good story. I love that. What, like such a gold mine for a modern day safety risk professional, whatever, to hear the line, do you want me to show you how we really do it? Yes, please. why didn't you ask sooner? Oh my god, like what a gold mine. It reminds me of a story actually that is probably one of my favorite moments, but also one of my proudest moments as a professional, but also one of the biggest lessons in my career as well, in that I used to do kind of audits, basically. They were called audits, and I'd said for a very long time, can we not just change the word of this? It sounds very daunting, people don't like it, but the company kind of refused to. And long story short, so anyway, I do these audits and I get to this property and I turn up and I pull into the driveway, and on this one day I was actually, we'd had a new colleague join the safety team, and I said, look, if you want to come and kind of join me for a day or whatever, happy to have you along, mate, to kind of help you just induce yourself into the company. And he said, oh yeah, great, I'd love to come down with you and do one of your properties. So I said, what about this day? So anyway, we get to a property, there's two of us, right? So two safety professionals coming to audit this property. So we turn up, get to the door, the guy answers the door, full high vis, right? And he kind of blocks us and just says, like, you know, kind of like ushers us like a parking attendant and says, hello, hiya, I'm, and you could tell he was really kind of chewing his words. He was a bit nervous, like, and he was like, would you like to just sign in for health and safety reasons, if you wouldn't mind just signing in? And I was like, okay, yeah, sure, mate, I don't mind signing in. So he kind of signed in, and my colleague signed in as well. And we kind of looked at each other a glance and were like, something not right here. And we kind of got in, and it was kind of my audit, and so my colleague had kind of let me kind of take the lead on it, and we'd gone in, and he said, right, should we have a look around it? And I thought, this is my opportunity now. I've got to do something right now to change this, otherwise I'm screwed. What can I do? And I just went back to what I always resort back to, is just being authentic James, which is
like so not formal. Which is just coincidentally like what I'm like. I don't like formal stuff. I'm not formal. I'm very relaxed. I'm very laid back. I like a laugh. I like to relax. So I just went, do you know what, mate? I've been driving for an hour. My colleague's been driving for about 3 hours. I'm sure we could pretty much nail a cup of tea before we do absolutely anything else. Can we just have a brew? And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, sure. Do you want to have a look around whilst we have it? I said, have you got just somewhere we could sit? Let's just sit and have a chat and have a cup of tea. I was like, what do you think? And my colleague was like, yeah, definitely. I've been driving for hours, so just do a chill for a minute. So he got it. So I also in the back of my head whilst I'm doing this, I'm worried, what kind of safety professional is this? Is the new guy? I had a good feeling about him anyway from chats that we'd had, but I was also in the back of my head like, is he going to pick up that we need to change here? And we need to kind of make this guy feel, and he got it straight away. And we just kind of just had a chat for ages, like just sat there having a coffee, didn't talk about anything. It was like, what do you like? He liked football, this guy. Like we were just chatting about football, and I said, I'm not really a football guy. I'm more of a rugby guy. And then we were chatting about rugby for a bit. And then he just kind of, you could just see him, his shoulders went down and he kind of just relaxed a little bit. And then I just said, I'm just going to call it and see what the issue is. I said, look, mate, when I turned up, I'll be honest with you, I got feeling like you were really nervous. I felt like you were really worried about us turning up. Do you want to tell me what that's about? And he basically told me the story of the last time he had an audit from my predecessor, and this guy would like shout at him and was just like a police officer, basically. I know that's a cliche in our profession now, but you know, I'd actually never, I know we talk about all the police officers, but I'd actually never heard a story as bad as this. This guy would shout at him being like, why is this door like this? This shouldn't be like this. You're incompetent. And I was just like, really? And me and my colleague were like,
makes me feel sick shocked that anyone gets treated like that.
I know, yeah. We were shocked. We were like, you're having us on. Please tell me you're exaggerating. And he was like, I'm honestly not. So we asked a couple of other members of staff in that area, and they were all like, no, he was very much like that. And we were just like, oh my God. Both of us were infuriated that kind of created that reputation for our profession. But now imagine this. His last interaction was like that, being shouted at. He then gets an email 6 months later from me saying, hiya, I'm just coming along to do an audit. And also, do you mind if my other colleague comes? There's going to be two of us. Yeah. Not only is there one copper that's going to shout at you now, there's two. We'd not even turned upon site, and there was zero psychological safety. He was never going to tell us the truth of that property. What he was actually going to do is probably hide everything that was wrong. But we kind of managed to nail, like bring that down, get him to relax, introduce some psychological safety. We did end up having to get our paperwork out, unfortunately, because at the end of the day, it was an audit, which pains me. I can't remember shit, so I need to make notes. But what I did do is we got to the point and he was like, right, do we want to have a look around now? I said, yeah, look, I've got to take some notes, mate. Do you mind if I just take some notes whilst we go around? And he was like, yeah, sure. Like, I kind of gave him the power to make the decision. Like, do you mind if I take some notes as we go around? And he was like, yeah, sure. I said, I'll have some questions as we go. But really, all I want to know, mate, is what you're struggling with. What are you doing? You know, what are your challenges? How can we help? That's all we really want to know. And my colleague, Lee, who now, you know, does amazing stuff in safety, you know, he's 100% on that. He got it and he was with it. And we had a great day.
Yeah. Do you know the beautiful thing about that scenario as well is he will talk to his peers, and that even if it's that a couple of percent of a dial changed for the next people that interact with you, because they now know what your approach is like, your interaction, that micro focus, can have such a ripple effect. And especially in this profession, if you get known to be the reasonable, pragmatic, helpful coaching style of manager, you end up no doubt people reached out after that to say, can I proactively have some help?
And he actually became a massive pain in my ass because he rang me all the time whenever he had a problem. So, you know, it's up to you. If you want psychological safety,
your own success.
And you know, he was a really good guy. And it was a shame when I actually left the company and I went and I arranged another audit, because we still haven't changed the name of the audits, unfortunately. I went and had a cup of tea with him and said bye and that. But it was it's a lovely guy, and I hope that in the future he gets better safety professionals.
Well, you know what? I think it's there are a couple of times I think as you go through your career where you think, oh, I'm doing this all right, actually. I'm doing this the right way. And those moments, the being able to sit in a room and say, right, mate, you look well nervous. What's going on? Or do you want me to show you how it's really done? Or I was just thinking about, I did an audit position once in rail, and the first time I ever went out to do an audit, I was locked out of a station. Like, and this is a major city station, so they just locked it down because they were terrified. And just having a conversation to say, look, I know what you're doing and I trust you. I'm coming anyway. So unless you want me to open these doors by myself and make a judgment with no context, I can. Much rather you be here to tell me what the day-to-day feels like and why something is the way that it is. And by the end of that audit, I had the same. I'd all of the local managers be like, are you auditing me next? Because it sounds like you're a lot of help. Because that's what we're meant to be doing, right? We're supposed to be helping them identify what could hurt them.
Yeah.
And helping them make it better.
And I think as well, like, I was just thinking, like, what are the kind of tangible advice that we could kind of close this up with? Like, how, and I was thinking, like, how could you tell you haven't got it? Like, because people might think, like, oh yeah, we have good banter with each other and we have good chats and all that. Like, so it might feel like you're in a really comfortable environment, but actually when it comes to honestly being told in the workforce, actually we don't do it like that, or kind of we're always making errors, we just don't say it. And I was thinking back to what are the kind of phrases that I've heard that might indicate that I might not have known back then, but actually would look at it differently now. And that would be like, oh yeah, this has happened loads of times, or yeah, we've always done it like that. Those kind of classic lines that we always talk about in safety as a kind of, you know, or humans and all that's crap, like that is an indication that they don't feel safe to tell you about it, in my opinion.
I think if you were gonna take a step back and think what is psychological safety, and we're talking about an individual, so it's personal, being able to say what they need to say, what, you know, be open. And I think for me, I can always tell if the room's not quite right or the individual's not quite right if I ask them how they are and they trip over a fairly formal answer.
Yeah.
I already know that they're priming an answer even to a very simple personal question, rather than, well, actually, it's garbage at the moment, like work's crazy. Like, okay, so we've got some openness about how you're really doing. So I think asking how somebody really is, the way they answer can be stiff or comfortable or like gushing with reality or not, is probably the first indicator for me that they are feeling safe or they're not. And then to step on from there, if they are, brilliant, you know, stay with that vibe. If they're not, there are some things I think you can do to help. One of them is, I always say this internally, go first. If they're not sure, then talk about the last, whatever it is, safety inspection that you've done and how you had a great time and actually you learned about something that was done completely off piece. So interesting. Really make an example of your approach, so that they might not be able to trust you straight away. But the more they hear about a colleague trusted you to do something, you didn't do anything bad as a result, you can set that scene at intro stage.
Yeah.
And that for me is usually walk into the meeting room. Just like, you all right, mate? Yeah. Oh, okay, wicked. What's going on at the moment? It seems like really high paced around here. Ooh. And then you just pull them into what they know, make them be comfortable with them, and then build on that with what's the last thing that you did? And I very often with engineers, because I used to be one, I'll say about a time that I broke the rules and why. I'm really open about that. So, you know, why do I do what I do? I do it because nobody listened to me as an engineer. Nobody put my safety first. They wrote a cold process and it's usually garbage. Because it was. And then you get a little bit of like, well, it is garbage, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I think just if you want somebody to be psychologically safe, you have to be vulnerable. You can't do it without.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is inherently like a sense of vulnerability within it. And I think people don't like using that word, vulnerable. Like I kind of said a few times in conversations, you know, we as leaders have to be vulnerable right now. And that, oh, I don't really like the term vulnerable. I'm not sure we're vulnerable. Like, no, you're seeing vulnerable as a bad thing. Like, yes, it is a bit scary for us. And I know the word vulnerable has a negative connotation to it, but ultimately it's kind of positive vulnerability in a way. Like the result that we're going to get from this vulnerability is a shitload of data that's going to tell us what it happens. But you have to be vulnerable to be able to be comfortable with someone to turn around and say, I actually don't think you know what you're doing. And this is the best way to do it, because you haven't been on the shop floor for 10 years, or you've never been on the shop floor, or whatever it is. Like, swallow the arrogance and let them tell you what work is really like.
Absolutely.
Especially for safety professionals as well. Like, I think we need to understand how much we are impacting psychological safety by the way we're reacting to stuff. And I kind of, like, as we're having this conversation, I was thinking, you know, I'm not sure you got on very well with the book that we read this month at Project Elitum, but we just finished reading Carsten's book on culture. And interestingly, like, the kind of tone that came out of that culture is kind of its emergent property of interactions, which for me is kind of like also what psychological safety is. Like, it's an emergent property of interactions, which comes back to what we were saying earlier. It's a property of the group in a way. But listening to what we're talking about, I'm like, it's a property of that interaction, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I suppose what I was thinking while you were talking there is, I think the thing that's permeating my head right now is we have several types of relationship in our lives. We have friendships, we have family, we have our loved ones, our partners. We also have working relationships, right? In all the other ones other than work, if we are not vulnerable to being pulled up, if we're being a douchebag or, you know, pulled up on our behavior or whatever, you can't progress the relationship, or the relationship falls over, right? That is par for the course of any relationship where you really want it and you're invested in it growing and being long. Then we get to work. The minute you get clinical, you're in a relationship with that organization, right? You're in a relationship with all of your peers around you, with your manager. Without the same level of vulnerability, it can't be healthy, just like a marriage or a friendship. It can't go long term like a marriage or a friendship. And don't expect to grow in it like a marriage or a friendship.
Couldn't have said any better myself, really. I'm really not sure what to say to that. I think that we do need to change. I think we do need to change the way that we view work. Like we need to eradicate the saying "same shit, different day." Or do you know what I mean? Like, just getting paid a buck and that's what we're here for. Like, yes, there are elements to every job that you just kind of turn up and collect a paycheck. I get that, but if leaders really want to unleash the full potential of their people, they need to make sure that they feel psychologically safe to tell you why they can't unleash their full potential, because it might be you or the systems that you've created.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. I think if we were going to nail down some stuff then, right, for like key takeaways for this, for people, I think there are some real fundamentals about what it is. And even if you can't articulate it perfectly, there is something in there about a two-way relationship.
Yeah.
There's something in there about building trust.
Yeah.
There is something about being really open to feedback, to that vulnerability to be told, you're not doing a great job as my boss right now, because I feel like crap. You need to be open to that, or whether it's you creating a system or whatever. And then how to build it, how to recognize it. Those sort of real initial questions, or even if it's an office you're working all the time, it's quite quiet.
Yeah.
And then how to build, go first.
Be vulnerable. I like that. Yeah. Like
talk that. About a time you messed up. And I would say put your whole self in that room. If you're asking somebody to bring their whole self to work, I hear this all the time, and then you won't talk about your whole self, someone's going to only mirror your effort there.
Yeah.
So go first.
Yeah, I would kind of second a lot of those. One of these, that my point is definitely kind of seconding it. Like, if you want someone to bring their whole self to work, then you also need to care about their whole self. Like, if you're the kind of guy that says, or girl, or anyone that says that they want to bring, you want them to bring their whole self to work, but you're also that person on LinkedIn that's like, this is a professional platform, we don't talk about personal lives. But hang on a minute, you want me my whole self or what? Because my whole self is including my puppy, my baby, my wife, lack of sleep, like what I did at weekend. That's my whole self. You either want it or you don't. And if you choose not to want it, that's fine. You know what? That's your organization. I don't want to work there, but ultimately that's what you choose. That's your prerogative. So like asking, you know, going, hi, Crystal, how are you? Oh, great. That's good. Can you get that report done? Like, how you react and how you interact with a person has consequences to the culture of the organization and the psychological safety of an organization. If you ask somebody how they are, then you need to listen to that response. If you don't want to listen to that response, you don't have time to listen to that response, that's fine.
Yeah.
Don't ask.
Yes. Be real.
Yeah.
Say, do you know what? My tail is on the fire at the moment and I'm really sorry, mate. I'd love to have a brew. We need to grab it next time.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, that's being human. I love the point. I really love the point that you've just said there that I want to just really, really bring to the fore about if you're asking people to bring their whole self to work, you have to commit to care about them. And it could be very easy for somebody listening to us to write down some sort of key things, how to recognize it, what they can do, and think of it as transactional and a skill set that they can just sort of build on. And what I'd really like to put in the center of that is that care piece, that if somebody doesn't feel psychologically safe, rest at the word safe. That individual doesn't feel safe right now. This is not transactional. This is not a mining exercise for information. Your role right now is to make them feel safe. If you want the best out of your conversation and your relationship, you need to make them feel safe. That's a really human, caring thing. It's not transactional.
And also it's subjective. So it's different to every single person. One person will be psychologically safe in this environment and another person won't be psychologically safe in that environment. And it's ultimately a really bloody hard challenge to work out how you get those two people in a team and they're all together. I do think that lived values, principles, purposes, whatever you want to call them, mission, vision, values, whatever, I do think if you have them, And you've done them right, in that, e.g., the organization is a big part of that, the employees are a big part of that, and they're lived throughout the organization, I think that's a really important part. I think the sub teams throughout a chain of a hierarchy should have their own mission, vision, and values, so that then you can have those difficult conversations, all knowing that we're going in that right direction. I think we devalue a lot of that stuff as just a management like practice. And like, no, they're really important. Is what are our values as a team? And what are we trying to achieve? So that I can say, Crystal, I don't agree with what you've just said. And it's not personal. It's because I'm on the same boat as you. And I want us to make sure that we're going in that direction. But I actually don't agree that that's the right direction, because inevitably teams will disagree and people are different and people are more uncomfortable or uncomfortable in one environment than they are the other.
Yeah.
And with that complexity, we all need something to hold on to.
Yeah.
And we need to know what we exist for. And I think that's really, really important.
Yeah. I love the micro, the mission, the having separate values disagree, because I feel like people will just be all over the place. But that micro mission, I totally wholeheartedly agree with, because you need to be able to turn up and be like, this is our ship. This is where we're going. This is the island we're aiming for. And know that everybody else has got that mission and really feels on board with that as well, part of that process.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah. We'll have to discuss on values one day.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, ultimately, if an organization has lived values, then a team probably wouldn't need their own values, I suppose. I probably agree on that point. I'd think one last thing for people to take away. If psychological safety is not on your risk assessment, then I think you should be considering it as a risk to your organization, because if you ain't got it, the big risk.
Do you know what? What an epic statement to end on. That is, what a reflection point. It is a risk to your organization. What I love is, what's the severity? I'm in now. I'm thinking about the severity. How bad could that be?
Yeah.
What could the impact be? What a cool thing to think about.
And how can we fudge the likelihood numbers so that it doesn't go in the red?
No, I love that. Absolutely brilliant.
Definitely. I think we're missing a lot of shit in our business if it not there. I think we look at risk assessments so transactional, you know, where are the hazards, what's the likelihood, like you're not considering all these safe stuff. Like we've just kind of launched in the day job our operational risk framework, and culture is a risk. It's in there as a risk. It's not something like, here's our risk kind of structure, here's our culture. No, if our culture is risk, or where, if we were to include risk or opportunity, you know, depending on your culture, it's an opportunity or a mitigation, whatever you want to call it. Or if it's not very good, it's a risk. Same as psychological safety. All of that stuff, they're risks to your organizations, or they're mitigations of the risk, one or the other.
I'm going to have a proper reflect on that. And what a bombshell to land at the end, James. Now I'm just like, got so much to think about.
I could talk about risk assessments all day long. They're literally my soapbox more than most things. Anyway, I shall let you go. Thank you very much, Crystal. I look forward to the next one. Remind us what we're talking about in the next episode.
So join us again for a podcast on authenticity and what its role is in culture change.
Awesome. And if people want to hear more about your stories that you alluded to in your career in a very male-dominated environment, they should go check out the Diversity miniseries, because you'll either be out when this comes out, you've either just come out or been out a while, I think. I can't remember what the structure looks like. I've gladly handed that over to my wife.
Thank you very much. Lovely. Thanks, James.
Okay, peeps, hope you enjoyed that episode. That was episode one of the Quarterly Co-host. Got two more to come. Obviously, Quarterly Co-host, there's three episodes, so I hope you liked that. Hope you got some value out of it. Hope you took some good notes. Let us know what you thought. Don't forget to go check out Paradigm Human Performance, and if you're keen to understand what I'm doing, you can check out loads of stuff that I'm doing. Go check out rebrandedsafety.com. There's the website with all our merch and stuff. And maybe don't buy any merch yet, because we've got some new stuff coming. If you're listening to this live, if you're listening to this like 2 years after we publish it, then go to Rebranded Safety and check it out. Ultimately, come over to projectmiletium.com and check us out over there, see what we're doing. All the websites and links and stuff is all in the description below. But don't forget to check out Paradigm, connect with me on LinkedIn, connect with me on Twitter, connect with Crystal as well. And ultimately, I'll catch you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the host and its guests and do not necessarily reflect the position of the companies. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are examples only based on limited and dated open source information and should not be utilised in real life as the only solution available. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the companies. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic or otherwise, without prior written permission from James McPherson.